Now we're in depth on why training your brain, well, it might be tougher than it sounds. What's the difference between knowledge and intelligence? That question's at the center of the argument over whether brain training companies like LearningRx are really doing what they claim. Are they giving you ways to acquire and retain more information, or are they really raising your fundamental intelligence itself? It's not an idle question. These companies are big business in this country. So we're going to find out what the research says. Your experience with this would be valuable, too. Have you or your kids used one of these commercial brain training companies? What was your experience like? And how do you see the difference between knowledge and intelligence? So if you have signed up at LearningRx or one of the other companies, I'd like to hear what your experience was like. What happened as you or your son or daughter, got involved with this? I mean, what kinds of techniques were they using? And what's the difference in your perspective between the idea of knowledge and intelligence? We're going to talk about that this morning. 651-227-6000-800-242-2828. You can go to the Daily Circuit feature page and leave your comments there. Or, of course, you can get onto Twitter with me, at @CarrieMPR, and weigh in there. Zach Hambrick is one of our guests. He's an associate professor of psychology at Michigan State University, and he's with us today from Lansing. Zach, welcome. Good to have you on the show.
Thank you.
Dan Hurley joins us. He's a science reporter and New York Times contributor. He's also working on a book about intelligence, and he's with us from New Jersey. And hi, Dan. Welcome to you.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Zach, how do you define intelligence? And can I ask you, is it something that is in some ways determined at birth or in your earliest developmental years? Help us understand this.
Well, there's a lot of controversy about how exactly to define intelligence. If you ask a dozen different psychologists for a definition, you'll get a dozen different definitions. But I think of intelligence in fairly broad terms as the ability to solve novel problems, adapt to new situations, and the ability to learn, the ability to profit from experience. And the question of whether intelligence is influenced by genes has been of interest for a long time to psychologists, and the consensus is that it is to some extent. So estimates of the contributions of genes to intelligence are typically in the range from about 50% to 70%, meaning differences across people in intelligence are at least partly due to genetic factors.
So, Dan, which would mean that if indeed that's what the research will prove out, it means that there might be room for actually building your intelligence, and that is what some of these companies are arguing, right?
Well, we all know that your experiences, your background, your upbringing, your education have an effect. I mean, if you raised a kid and kept them in a room by themselves without interacting with anybody, their mind is going to turn to jelly. Whereas if you have people that are raised with all kinds of exposures to reading and opportunities to be using their mind, that helps them. The question is, for these training companies, can you sit down in a matter of some hours a week and add anything to the mix that you already got from your genes and your upbringing?
Mm-hmm.
That's the question that's now being debated.
And then let me ask you this, Dan. Given that is the question, what role does memory play in this, in the question of whether we're actually building intelligence or are we building the ability to retain information?
Well, you know, most people, when they think of memory, they think of long-term memory. And you know, do you remember that the name of that guy that you saw last month at the meeting? And here he is again, and you're, oh my gosh, I can't remember his name. Who is that guy? And there's another kind of memory, though, which is actually much more important. It's called working memory. Working memory is your ability to hold a few things in your mind at once and work with them and use them. So as I am talking right now, right, I've got to know what I'm saying, and I've got to remember the point of what I'm saying, and I'm using a bunch of words as I'm speaking, and I've got to juggle all that. And the ability to do that kind of thing is where it is closely related to intelligence. So that is the kind of thing that people are looking to zoom in on and train people to expand this working memory.
So far, so good, Dan, with the juggling of the memory there. Zach, from your perspective, what role does memory play in trying to analyze what these companies are actually doing with intelligence?
Well, as Dan said, the focus of many of these cognitive training programs is to improve working memory. So working memory is the ability to hold in mind task-relevant information relevant to a problem that you're trying to solve. And so there is evidence, at least for a correlation, between this type of memory, which is called working memory, and intelligence, and in particular what we call fluid intelligence. Fluid intelligence is the type of intelligence that reflects our ability to solve novel problems. And so the focus of many of these commercially available programs is to enhance working memory. The idea is pretty straightforward. If working memory is an important component of fluid intelligence, then by improving people's working memory, we should be able to improve their fluid intelligence.
And yet, Zach, you are saying the jury's out on that.
The jury is out on that. So there have been claims for the effectiveness of working memory training. One was reported in Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, but there have been subsequent failures to replicate the findings of that study. So the jury is very much still out on whether short-term working memory training actually works as a way to improve fluid intelligence.
I'm going to take some calls here, Dan, but I know you've got thoughts on that too, so we'll come back to this. To Susan in Rochester. Hi, Susan. What was your experience with this?
Hi. Yeah, I have a daughter that went through a program at LearningRx here in Rochester, and you were just speaking about working memory being an important component towards IQ or ability to learn. But my daughter had deficiencies in not only working memory, but LearningRx told me areas like processing speed.
Mm-hmm.
And she had great difficulties in all of learning. She's adopted, so I don't know her background, but she was in our home, from birth. So I know she was exposed to the same kinds of learning activities that my other kids had, but she basically came wired with a different neurological map that made learning very difficult for her, and we just had a hard time pinpointing what the problem was. And what I really loved about our experience at LearningRx was that they were able to pinpoint why she was having such a hard time reading and learning math skills, and they set up a program where they paired her with trainer to work on those skills, and once she was able to build those skills, it was just truly amazing how her reading blossomed.
So, Susan, did you emerge from that thinking, well, they have not just zeroed in on some of these cognitive difficulties she was having with reading and math? Did you emerge from that saying, I think they've actually built her intelligence in a way from this experience?
Oh, clearly, because was the type of child where she just didn't quite make those same kinds of connections that other kids do in real-world experiences, mm-hmm. where you would have to explain to her how to play tic-tac-toe, for example. She didn't get the concept of something beside each other, or she wouldn't make the same correlations that other kids do where, A plus B equals C. And the fact that she has got these newfound skills in how to make those inferences was kind of a really pleasant side benefit that we weren't expecting. But so, just in a lot of ways, she not only built her confidence, but her skills that apply not just to reading and math, but we see it applying to, you know, comprehending real-world experiences now that she couldn't do before.
So, Dan, what are you hearing what Susan's talked about?
Well, I've heard these stories many times. I've met a bunch of people that will tell you, by golly, this worked, and that they had tried other things and had gone to tutoring services that were trying to help the kid learn the stuff, and they didn't get any benefit from that, but that working on their cognitive skills helped. The question remains, of course, is that, you know, is that a placebo effect? Is that from sitting with a caring trainer, right, and going through these exercises, did she just gain confidence and now she's doing better? You know, judging this evidence, and as Zach said, there is conflicting evidence. There is no question that this area right now is a white-hot debate among academics. There are it's something of an academic food fight right now over whether this stuff works and holds up, or whether it's a bunch of hooey. And, you know, I just want to be clear, though, that it's not the case that there's just a few studies suggesting it works and a bunch of studies saying it doesn't. It's more like there's a lot of studies now. There's dozens of studies showing that this stuff can work in certain circumstances to some degree in some people, right? But there are also studies, at least a dozen, published and unpublished, that have failed to find the effects. So scientists, serious researchers, are trying to figure out what's going on. There are people that insist there's nothing there. There are people that insist it works, it's proven. I think, you know, the jury is out. I, as a journalist with no stake in the game, I find it hard to believe that all these people and all of these studies that have found an effect are all being misled.
Okay. Let me invite some other listeners in here. If you've just tuned in, we're talking about some companies. You've heard us referring to LearningRx and some of the other ones that advertise as being able to train your brain and, in some cases, raise your level of intelligence. We're examining some of the claims that they make with our guests this morning, talking about some of the research that influences how people are assessing what these companies can do. And your experience with it, I think, would be valuable in the conversation. If you or your kids have used the services of these commercial brain training companies, what was your experience with it? I mean, did your child walk away from that? Yes, being able to read better. But did you see some significant changes in their cognitive capabilities? What was your experience like if you've used them? 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. Weigh in on our Daily Circuit feature page and just put your comments right there. And Steph Curtis taking a look at that. And you can reach me on Twitter at @CarrieMPR. Zach, I want to come back to you with what Dan just said about the research. And I want to ask you, given what Susan said, was her child, do you think, learning better how to pay attention? And that capability of being able to focus and pay attention looks like it gave her, and it did, gave her improved cognition. Is that some of what we have to try to figure out here?
Well, you know, that's certainly possible. That's really, I think, the major question at this point. So there's no denying that we can improve people's skills through training. So you can improve a child's mathematical ability through training them in math, or you can improve their reading ability through giving them training in reading. But really, the critical question here is whether this training transfers to other sorts of activities. For example, whether it makes them better at paying attention, whether it improves their general intelligence and not just the specific skills that they were trained on. And I guess I would have to take issue with the view that most of the studies that have been published to date have provided supportive evidence for the effectiveness of these programs, or that convincing evidence. So I point to a very recent meta-analysis of numerous studies, 23 studies that looked at cognitive training. This was published in the Journal of Developmental Psychology. And summarizing the results of 23 studies, they found no evidence for this sort of transfer that I mentioned. So yes, people get better at the specific tasks that you give them practice on, but there was no convincing empirical evidence in this meta-analysis for the sort of transfer that we're looking for with these sorts of programs.
Let's let me grab a call here from Carl in Plymouth. Hi, Carl. What's your experience with this?
Well, my experience isn't directly, but I guess I have to agree with what the other person I just said. I read a there's a book called The Talent Code that I use as a basis for coaching. I coach a high school ski team. And what I've noticed is some kids can't make large jumps on concepts, either physical or or thought processes on how to train your body to do certain things. And what the Talent Code really talks about is breaking things into much smaller components, so that once you master a small component, you can start adding to that. And it's really training your body both intellectually and physically to make these changes. I'm not quite sure if they're actually learning more or if their bodies and minds are learning to think slightly differently and the innate ability to do that is there. But some kids need to go very small. Some kids can make giant leaps, and it's based on the person.
Thanks very much, Carl, for your experience. Let me take a call here from Dave in Mound. Hi, Dave. You work at Learning Rx.
How are you?
I'm well. You actually work at Learning Rx?
Pardon me?
You work at Learning Rx,
yes,
is that
I do.
Right?
I've been a cognitive skills trainer for about a year and a half now.
Okay, what'd you want to say about the conversation?
Well, I'll answer questions. I guess generally I caught the last 5 minutes. Sorry, I'm walking. I'm working. I work my brain more than my body.
I was going to say, sounds like you're doing something else.
What's that?
It sounds like you're doing something else.
Yeah, what'd you, I'm going to sit down here.
Tell me what you called in to say.
You know, just let's not put a too big a load on the intelligence enhancing factor. You know, I talked to the guy who answered the phone and told him, I like the gym analogy, the physical body analogy. We're kind of the gym. We get your brain organized. The brain is malleable. And we organize it, get it stronger to go out and run the race or play the football game. Get the intelligence, I'll say. Does that make sense?
Well, I don't know why your company just doesn't say we improve your cognitive skills. Why do you have to say, and we also build your intelligence?
Well, I'm going to guess it's from the empirical evidence. Again, I'll go back to my experience. I've seen amazing results. They test in, these students test in, their kids, people. I've had adult students. They test in, go through the training, and test out. I've witnessed improvement in grades. I guess if A equals B and B equals C, A equals C. There was a program in a bigger school system, an independent education. One of my students got removed from that. I guess that's kind of unheard of, hard to do. So he got that much better and was taken out of what I'll call a special reading or special education area.
But okay, but so you're getting results, but that doesn't really resolve the controversy here. And let me bring Dan in. And Dave, if you want to stay on the line here for a minute, if you will. Dan?
Yeah, I mean, listen, if you go online, you can find complaints from parents who will say, I did this And Learning Rx, by the way, is pretty darn expensive. It can be, you know, you can spend $8,000-$10,000 on this program. And you can find complaints of people that say, my kid went through it, did everything, and nothing happened. You can also find a lot of people who will say, as your first caller did, that they got extraordinary benefits that they never saw anywhere else. Just to back up, what's interesting about all this is that the skills being trained are not like, you know, the things, the straightforward things like we're going to work on math.
Yeah.
We're going to work on reading.
I get that.
They're training things. These are originally developed as tests of your cognitive abilities, and they've got turned into training regimens. And to the surprise of many, you can absolutely get better on these, on what were once considered tests of sort of native ability. And so the question starts becoming, it starts getting a little circular. If you're getting better at all these things that seem to be the underlying constituents of intelligence,
mm-hmm.
now aren't you smarter?
Yeah.
Then, well, people say, well, wait a minute. No, now you're tricking yourself. You're getting better at these little tasks, and now they're no longer predicting what your native intelligence is. I'll say, you know, I even went to Walter Reed National Military Medical Center in Washington, D.C. last week, and I met with some wounded soldiers, one guy who, you know, has no more legs, people that had been exposed to blasts, hit by shrapnel. And these are people who said their life was a mess. They couldn't think their way out of a paper bag. They had lost all these abilities. And they went through some of these other training programs like CogMed and Lumosity. And after 6 months, these people said it's changed their lives and really it helped them. So, you know, we all have to judge what we make of the evidence.
That's exactly what we're wrestling with here. Dave, a brief response here? Or
well, in Dan's first comment, yes, you're going to get good reviews, bad reviews. I think there's a product out there that gets 100% either way. First of all, would you agree with that?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, and I'll go to the other extreme. I tend to speak in extremes. It's never hurt anybody, to my knowledge.
Well, it's expensive, as we pointed out. You might be wasting money.
Yeah. One thing that to say in support of Learning Rx is because one of the biggest problems with these training methods is they are hard. They are not fun. It's like going to the gym. It's really, people don't like to do it. And one thing about going to a place and having a trainer is they hold your feet to the fire. And that can absolutely help, because even in doing these studies, they'll find that a lot of the people will just drop out of the study, because these cognitive exercises, I am telling you, I've tried them. They are hard.
Online, Maureen in St. Paul says her daughter went through Learning Rx. They didn't see any results. They spent a lot of money. They have another child struggling, and they won't send her. I mean, Zach, again, this is why I set this up, saying these are not insignificant questions here. They're expensive, and some of these companies are making claims that I think you're here to say this morning the research doesn't necessarily support.
That is what I would say. I think, you know, that at this point, we simply don't know whether these programs are effective for increasing general aspects of intelligence as they are advertised to do. I am not convinced by the available evidence that these programs, such as those marketed by Lumosity, CogMed, that they work as advertised. I'm not convinced by the scientific evidence that has gone through peer review and that is currently available.
Zach Hambrick is one of our guests. If you've just tuned in, he's an associate professor of psychology at Michigan State University. And Dan Hurley is here, a science reporter. He's a New York Times contributor. He's interested in this. He's working on a book about intelligence. And we're examining this morning the claims of companies that improve cognitive skills, but also say that they can build your intelligence. Companies like Lumosity and Learning RX, and taking a look at some of what they say and your own experience with them. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. You can reach me, of course, on Twitter at @CarrieNPR. From the Daily Circuit feature page here, Steph, what are we hearing?
Tess says anything you can do to help a student succeed is great, but this type of training is outside of regular curriculum and is very expensive and creates an elitist form of learning. What about the kids who have struggles because of poverty or environment who could actually really benefit from some one-on-one attention? This creates a huge gap.
And to the phones to Kim in Minnetonka. Hi, Kim. How did this work for you?
Hi. I was a student at LearningRx, and Dave was my trainer.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know if he's still on the line.
He's probably listening, but he's not on the line.
Okay. So I just heard Zach say that he is not convinced that they work as advertised.
Right.
And I'm just telling you that I am convinced because it happened to me. So the jury is not out for me.
For
the
you.
The jury is in. Yes. So it was actually a life-changing experience. I had an unfortunate response to a migraine medication that was prescribed, you know, I'm sure in good faith. And the medication is called Topamax, and the nickname for that is Dopamax, and it can cause all sorts of extremely challenging processing issues in people. It's a medication that's usually used for epilepsy, and as I certainly am no expert on that, I think it does something with the processing of the seizures, but at any rate, it's supposed to do something with the processing of the pain. It really didn't help me, and after I stopped taking it and, you know, realized that, you know, I was mad and upset. I couldn't untake it. I put my name in the hat at a scouting event for LearningRx, just chatted with Missy about it, and she, you know, I thought, okay, why not? I actually won a free evaluation. I took the test, and I was shocked to see how how I had the evidence that my memory was not working the way I wanted it to, and there were some things that I scored, you know, much higher in, like auditory processing and word attack or whatever. I mean, I've always been able to speed read, and I've always, you know, all my siblings and I have all gone through gifted education, which is, you know, much better now, of course, but at any rate, there's no doubt something happened to me, and I thought, what can I do? And this opportunity presented itself. I did go and take this class, and it was the hardest thing I've ever done. I went 4 days a week.
Kim, do forgive me for interrupting here.
Sure.
We've got a lot of other people that want to get in. What I want to do is, if you'll stay with us for a minute, I want to ask Zach. So, Zach, Kim goes to this. She comes in with memory problems. What might have happened at LearningRx? What kind of training was she getting that would lead her to say, jury's not out for me? It did work.
Well, I mean, I certainly don't, you know, dispute her report of her experience. I mean, it sounds like she certainly did improve. But the critical issue here, this goes back to something that Dan said before, is to know exactly what that sort of change is attributable to. And so that's why we conduct studies in which we have control groups. So the purpose of a control group is, in a study of one of these programs, is to rule out other explanations for improvements in the treatment group. So it could be motivation. It could be simply the passage of time. So it's critical in assessing the effectiveness of these programs to have appropriate control groups to be able to establish that any effects of any differences due to the training, for example, LearningRx or Lumosity, are due to the treatment per se, mm-hmm. and not to other factors.
And Dan, tell me what you're thinking as you listen to what Kim described.
Well, you know, listen, Zach is right. In any individual case, was it due to the this specific series of exercises? Was it due to the passage of time? You know, we don't know. In her particular case, the real question is, overall, with a lot of people, does this kind of stuff work? You know, just for clarity, there are a lot of randomized trials that have been conducted that have compared people getting various kinds of cognitive exercises versus those not getting that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I've seen, you know, dozens of these studies that have found effects and benefits. There was a study presented just in Minneapolis a few weeks ago at the Psychonomics meeting at the convention center, and they showed that people getting this working memory training were better able to learn Arabic words and remember them mm-hmm. that they had never heard before than people who were not getting this training. So there is, to just focus on these companies, it's always easy to say, well, these companies are just trying to make a buck. Because, listen, every company is just trying to make a buck. We know that about companies. But scientifically, does this kind of strategy work? Because there are free programs online. I mean, if you type in working memory training, there's something called the NBAC training that has been shown in a bunch of studies to help. There's a lot of things out there that are perfectly free, and you know, people can try it for themselves if they're interested.
It's good advice, Dan. And I thank you so much for the time this morning. Interesting piece that you wrote for The Times. Thank you.
Thank you.
Dan Hurley with us. He's a science reporter and New York Times contributor. I want to grab another call here for Zach to Steve in St. Paul. Hi, Steve.
Yes, hi. I'm a clinical psychologist. Thanks for taking my call.
Okay.
I'm quite skeptical of people doing cognitive skills training and assuming that you're raising intelligence. What I think you're doing is raising cognitive skills, and I think that's very valuable. But, you know, it depends how you define intelligence, and it depends how you test it. You know, one definition of intelligence, the ability to think rationally, act purposefully, and deal effectively with the environment.
Mm-hmm.
Fine. But intelligence is a theoretical construct, and nobody has ever shown that there's a 100% correlation with some general factor called intelligence. It's a modest correlation, and there's many different types of intelligence and cognitive skills. If you could take the currently most widely used intelligence test, the Wechsler scale, and you can train people on those scales,
yeah.
and you can raise somebody's IQ score
mm-hmm.
15 points on average just through that kind of training. But I don't think that's increased their intelligence. I think they've just learned the cognitive skills that we're measuring. So I think you need to be very careful about assuming that you're increasing intelligence.
And
so
Zach, thanks very much, Steve. And Zach, do you agree with that?
I do agree with that. I think that this is what the evidence to date suggests. So we can give people training in all sorts of complex tasks. In the in-back task, which was one that Dan mentioned, we can give them training in basic attention tasks. We can give them training in reasoning tasks. And people will typically get better as a result of training on those tasks. The real issue and the controversy is whether that training has benefits beyond those specific tasks that people have been trained on. And my view at this point is that the available scientific evidence does not support the contention that we have that sort of transfer. The jury is still out on this.
Zach, I really appreciate the time this morning. It is, I think, as Dan says, a white-hot controversy at the moment, and now we've kind of heard the two sides defined, and I bet we talk about it again, so I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Zach Hambrick with us today is an associate professor of psychology at Michigan State University. You have some news breaking here,
Yeah,
Tom?
We just got word from the AP that pioneering jazz composer and pianist Dave Brubeck has died. Perhaps you remember the song Take Five. That was one of his many classics.
Well familiar.
Dave Brubeck was 91 years old, so that's just coming into the newsroom here.
And I am, Steph Curtis, getting a lot of comments here on the Concierge Medicine show. I think people tuned in late, and then they heard what we were talking about. I heard from a physician who says, Dr. Amanda Schlesinger, who said, hey, glad you did the show. I know you want to be able to preserve the traditional call-in format for a show about medical practice. If you really want a lot of physician input, you'd need to have an evening forum, even a call-in version that you would promote to physicians. It would occur in the evening. I think that's a good idea.
I think it's an interesting idea. We hear the same complaint from teachers that they get so upset.
I know.
What can we do? Between 9 and noon. I know you're teaching. It's much easier in the summer.
A lot happens between 9 and noon, but apparently not enough, and we need to be doing something in the That would be an interesting idea, maybe for a special subject at some point, do an evening call-in. I can hear the bosses going, no.
What are you saying?
A fourth hour of the Daily Circuit? What are you talking about? And I heard from Jenna, who says, caught about 15 minutes of the discussion today about concierge practices, wondering if there's any way to access a podcast or a transcript of the discussion. And so, Steph, right to you on that one.
There'll be a podcast up later today when the Daily Circuit podcast. You can always stream it directly from our website, too. Later this afternoon, we'll put it up. Probably it usually goes up around like 1:30. You can
find it. And this new feature thing that we're doing on the weighing in on our features page, how's it work?
It's so easy. It's just like, you know, newspapers have done for a long time. At the end of the story, you know, you can leave comments. Now on the Daily Circuit, at the end of our feature on any of the interviews, whether in-depth or not, you can leave comments or questions there, and I'm always trolling and looking at them.
Exactly. Steph's looking at those real time. This is the Daily Circuit on Minnesota Public Radio News. I'm headed upstairs to the Maud Moon Weyerhaeuser studio. Carol's Gone Awry. Yes, it's already time for that show. Coming up.